So you started off the day, mindfulness, silence, made our way to the Dhamma Hall. Inclined our mind to present moment awareness with the breath. We chanted together, both in English and in Pali, the Pali chanting, Siti Piso chant, very powerful chant. Certain occasions, like New Year's Eve, and chanted 108 times. 9 times is, I think, just like a good length. And it means that you can give yourself to the experience of chanting and the sounds that are produced without worrying about the next word, looking at a book. These are also meditations. The chanting is a form of cultivation. It's, the very least, it's right speech. When you're chanting, every single word that comes out of your mouth is a beautiful word, meaningful word. Most of them uttered by the Lord Buddha himself. So when the mind is focused on the chanting, then we so have to be aware of our immediate environment and the other chanters, trying to harmonize with them. This is why in monastic communities, every religion, I think, chanting is a daily practice, because it's creates a sense of harmony, sustains a sense of harmony in a very simple, beautiful way. We feel ourselves as part of a group together, striving together when we chant together. The chanting, and when we chant in Pali, then we can simply be aware of the sound of the words. That's the meditation object. And the movements of the mouth and the tongue as we pronounce these words. Very simple samatha exercise. When we chant in English or Thai or Chinese, then we can add the dimension of the meaning of the words. So it's a slightly different kind of feeling to it, of course. So sometimes it's enjoyable to just chant the Pali without worrying too much about the meaning of the words. And sometimes, as with the dedication of merit, at the end of a chanting period, then the meaning can be very important and carry on over into the meditation that follows the chanting. Chanting is a form of meditation, but we usually use it as a preliminary to the sitting meditation or perhaps walking meditation. That a meditation period of cultivation, and it's an exploration. It's a voyage of discovery. So we adopt this attitude of interest. It's this essential element of chanda, of wholesome, intelligent, wise desire, this sort of interest. What is this body and mind? What leads the mind onwards to the Dhamma? What pulls it away from the Dhamma? How can we train this mind? So the amount of the intensity of interest and commitment, enthusiasm, waxes and wanes. It's never completely stable. And so at the beginning of a meditation, that's one of the checks. Check our posture. Is it straight? Not too straight. Relaxed, not too relaxed, in the optimum state given the nature of our bodies to support our practice. There's a physical checklist, checking for areas of stress, you know, the usual suspects, where they might be in the jaw or the shoulders or the chest, and just relax those areas. But then with the mind, it's this quality that we call chanda or dhammachanda, which is the foundation for all striving, all effort, all of our exploration. So if we're feeling a little bit lacking in enthusiasm, interest, maybe it's too early in the morning, then we need to be willing just to spend a short time reflecting on thoughts, ideas, themes that bring up that sense of enthusiasm, interest in the practice. For example, we might consider the suffering that we've experienced in our life or we've observed in the lives of those that we love, due to defilement, due to greed and anger and delusion and confusion. And reminding ourselves that without some systematic, effective training of the mind, there's no end to that. It doesn't just go away by itself. And we reflect, for example, on the Lord Buddha himself, on the great disciples, the noble ones, monastic and lay, male and female, throughout the centuries, who have kept this teaching alive and transmitted it to us today. And the beauty, the nobility of these great beings, and that there's no unbridgeable gap between them and us. they realize the truth of the Dhamma, they free their minds by diligently following the Buddha's instructions. And if we follow the Buddha's instructions, then there's no reason we cannot experience the same results as these great beings received. And it's more simply bringing to mind an image of one of the great masters and teachers who one reveres, and that desire to follow in their footsteps, to honor their practice and their renunciation, their wisdom and their compassion, by emulating it, and to try to bring it into one's own life. So there are many different kinds of reflection, and we can accumulate a kind of database, a number of these reflections that we know are very uplifting to us. And at the beginning of the meditation, if there's a lack of this chanda, this Dhamma chanda, this love for the Dhamma, interest in the practice and the training, then spend some time just dwelling on one or two of those topics in order to bring up that supportive emotion. So now we turn to our meditation object and see where's the best place to start. Sometimes when we begin, then we feel ourselves drawn immediately to our chosen point of focus, in which we develop awareness of the breath, which may be at the towards the tip of the nose, or the lip, the upper lip, or the chest area, or the abdomen. And we just go straight there. It's just get down to it. Sometimes if the mind doesn't quite feel ready for that, still some restlessness in the mind, then we can start off with just a general awareness of the body sitting here on the mat, and imagining the breath coming into the body and spreading throughout the body, from the head, the shoulders, arms, hands, the torso, the bottom, the legs, the knees, feet, toes. And just imagine this refreshing, cool energy coming into our body and filling our body and filling our mind. And then letting it go, bringing it in and letting it go. And observing that there's nobody behind this, there's nobody breathing, someone who breathes in and someone who breathes out. The body is just doing this anyway. And we're bringing an awareness to it, present moment awareness. So we are recognizing, recognizing just the very ordinary, normal aspects of being human, being a living being here in the world right now, and giving some time and interest to what's often overlooked We don't need to search for any kind of special sensations. We're just interested in the normal ones that we don't usually give any attention to. So a variation on this practice is a very good option if you're feeling some dullness, sleepiness, and that's using your imagination again. And as the breath comes in and the breath comes out, imagine it's full of light. So the breath is light, bright light. And just feel light flooding through your whole body and mind as you breathe in. So the breath is the light. So use your power of imagination to experience this warm and refreshing light. Bring the memory of light, the perception of light into your mind consciously and ally it to the sensation of the breath. The breath coming in, breath coming out, so bringing light into the body, allowing light to spread out from the body. This is a skillful means to deal with sloth, torpor, dullness of mind, and just feeling the energy in the body that comes into the body with the breath and spreads out from the body in all directions. Again, a movement of imagination, a way of looking at the breath or experiencing the breath can also remove agitation from the mind. So these two hindrances are dullness and sleepiness and agitation. We can deal with these by expanding our awareness of the breath into full body awareness of the breath. But then when the time is appropriate, or perhaps we've gone straight to our chosen focus point already, then we now zoom in to this one particular spot. And if we need to, if hindrances are arising in the mind, then we always have that option of returning to the full body, like sort of oxygen balloon kind of awareness, where feeling the whole body expanding and contracting with the breath, or feeling the energy or the light throughout the body. But now we come to the particular point that we've chosen, and try to recognize the pleasant feeling that accompanies mindfulness. Because that is empowering, energizing. And we're not talking about rapture and bliss here, just the immediate sense of well-being that accompanies any moment of mindfulness. So to encourage the mind to be mindful, to really make this commitment to consistent, unbroken stream of awareness, of mindfulness, recognizing, observing the well-being that arises whenever there is mindful awareness. This helps. Nobody is averse to sukha vedana. We all like it. So use it as a tool. If you're still really not sure of the best place to for your focus on the breath, another alternative is within the nostrils. And sometimes the focus on the tip of the nose and the lip, that kind of area, to bring up some kind of constriction and tension, dullness. But when we breathe with the focus on the sensations within the nostrils, it's immediately pleasant. It's that coolness, that cool sensation as the breath enters within the nose. And that sense of opening out, it's like going through a narrow door and then opening up into a huge cavern. And we observe the in-breath, it's cool and refreshing. The out-breath is warm. So this is another skillful means for creating the best kind of relationship between the mind and the breath. It's the observation. Details of the breath, the length of the breath, the coarseness or subtlety of the breath, the temperature of the breath. So having a few more things to notice helps to ward off this boredom and aversion that can easily arise, especially if we live a life where we're used to a lot more stimulation. So as I suggested last night, we can also use a mantra, two-syllable mantra, or to count the breaths. So on this one meditation object, the breath, we can use it. It's very flexible, adaptable. We can use it as a basis for many different kinds of practice. We can use it as a basis for metta, bhavana, for death contemplation. So many different kinds of kamatan. But the challenge right now is, how can I enjoy this, even if there are defilements arising, passing away? Agitation, dullness, all these things coming to draw the mind away. How can I enjoy this sensation of the in-breath and the out-breath to the extent that I want to be with this present day, present moment awareness more than I want to be with any alternative? So this is one of the key factors of choosing the breath, choosing mindfulness, choosing awareness, rather than any alternative.